hello and welcome to this episode of The Lives and Styles of Old Hollywood. She was the woman who never gave interviews, the Oscar winner who once said more with a look than most could say with pages of dialogue, and who just happened to be married to a future US president. But Jane Wyman was so much more than a famous wife, a leading lady, or a tabloid footnote. She was one of classic Hollywood's most enduring stars, a performer of depth, subtlety, and resilience, who gracefully navigated decades of fame while maintaining a fiercely guarded private life. So Jane Wyman was born Sarah Jane Mayfield on January 5, 1917 in St. Joseph, Missouri. Her early life was marked by instability. Her parents separated and divorced when she was just 4 years old, and her father died soon after. Her mother moved to another state and left her with the neighbors, the family of the chief of detectives in St. Joseph, Richard D. Foulkes. She was primarily raised by them, and Sarah Jane unofficially took their surname and thus became Jane Foulkes. Of her childhood, Wyman would later say, "I was raised with such strict discipline that it was years before I could reason myself out of bitterness I brought from my childhood." In 1930, at 13 years of age, Wyman started high school and also started a career singing on radio, using the stage name Jane Durrell and making herself 3 years older in order to be allowed to work. In 1932, at the age of just 15, she dropped out of school, made her way to Hollywood and worked odd jobs. She then made her film debut in the early 1930s, playing uncredited bit parts in films like The Kid from Spain, Gold Diggers of 1933, Elmer the Great and Harold Teen. Actually, there was just one person she knew that might be able to give her a job in Hollywood, and that was Leroy Prince, the successful dance director at Paramount Pictures. How did she know him? She had taken classes with his dad at Prince's Dancing Academy back home in St. Joseph. And yes, Prince did give her a job and hired her for the chorus of several of his movies between 1934 and 1936. In 1936, Wyman had a supporting role in the successful Lambert Powell movie My Man Godfrey and signed her first contract with Warner Brothers that very year. At age 19, she would stay with the studio for 20 years. At Warner, Wyman appeared in dozens of B-movies and subsequently supporting roles in bigger feature films throughout the 1930s, both for Warner and on loan to other studios. One of the most fun parts she had at Warner's was 1939's Torchy Plain, Playing with Dynamite, the last installment in a fun series about a relentless woman reporter, one who actually was the inspiration behind Superman's Lois Lane. And Wyman pulled this fun role off with aplomb. It was only in 1945, 13 years after starting her acting career in Hollywood, that, as she called it, a small miracle happened. Her performance supporting Olivia de Havilland in the 1943 movie Princess O'Rourke had impressed Charles Brackett, who was then making The Lost Weekend together with Billy Wilder, who initially had wanted Katharine Hepburn for the movie. Instead, Wyman was cast and got great critical acclaim for her role. Even though she continued in supporting parts for the most part, she was now also cast in leading roles. In 1946, she played the lead role in The Yearling and received her first Academy nomination for Best Actress. Subsequent lead roles then got her the part of a deaf-mute rape victim in 1948's Johnny Belinda, which Wyman spent 6 months preparing for. The movie was a box office hit and Wyman won the Academy Award for Best Actress for it. This is notable, as Wyman was then the first person in the era of sound movies to win the Oscar without speaking a single word. Her acceptance speech was, "I accept this very gratefully for keeping my mouth shut once. I think I'll do it again." This dry wit and modesty became Wyman's trademark. Now a top-billed star, she performed in a string of acclaimed performances in Magnificent Obsession, All That Heaven Allows, and Lucy Gallant, often cast as women of dignity and internal struggle. She acted opposite stars like David Niven, Charlton Heston, Van Johnson, Rock Hudson, and Bing Crosby, took the lead in comedies, dramas, and thrillers, and worked with directors like Alfred Hitchcock and Frank Capra. In 1951, Wyman, who loved to sing and had done so in several of her movies, signed also with Decca Records. She recorded several solo tracks, duets, and novelty songs for the label and achieved 3 Billboard Top 30 hits. 1955 marks the year that Wyman made her debut on the small screen in an episode of the anthology series General Electric Theatre, which was hosted by Ronald Reagan. That very year, 38-year-old Wyman founded also her own production company, Lumen Productions, which she co-owned with American media conglomerate MCA. Through the company, she produced, hosted, and frequently starred in Jane Wyman Presents the Fireside Theatre, which was later renamed into the Jane Wyman Theatre and eventually just the Jane Wyman Show. The show ended after a 3-year run in 1958. Then, 41-year-old Wyman was no longer a star, but still in demand, and she acted in several movies as well as in several TV shows as a guest star, like Checkmate, Bob Hope Presents the Chrysler Theatre, The Investigators, or Inside. In 1962, though, 45-year-old Wyman went into semi-retirement, acting only occasionally, mostly in guest roles on TV. Her reasoning at that time? Something happened in the 60s. It seemed that the time didn't permit women to be part of it except in a sort of secondary sort of way, which I resented. I kept telling myself I didn't want to play whatever happened to Baby Jane. Instead, she focused on painting and her philanthropic work. But Wyman's second act came in the 1980s when she took on a role no one saw coming, the icy matriarch Angela Channing on the primetime soap Falcon Crest. Wyman by then was in her 60s and suddenly the face of a massive hit, as well as one of the highest paid actresses on screen. Falcon Crest ran from 1981 to 1990, with Wyman playing a scheming vineyard owner with style, ruthlessness and an iron grip on power. And she loved the role. It was unlike anything she'd ever done. For her role, she received numerous nominations for the Soap Opera Digest Award and the Golden Globe Award, and won it once. Unfortunately, though, her health got worse during the show's run. In 1986, she had abdominal surgery. In 1988, she suffered from severe fatigue, and in 1989, she collapsed from problems with a type 1 diabetes and a liver ailment. Despite her doctor's advice, Wyman returned to film the last 3 episodes of the show. All in all, she had appeared in 208 of the 227 episodes. She acted only once more after that, playing the mother of Jane Seymour in a 1993 episode of Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and then she officially retired from acting. She dedicated most of her time to painting and her friends and rarely ever made public appearances, mostly also because of her severe arthritis. Jane Wyman died on September 10, 2007 at age 90 in her sleep of natural causes at a home in Rancho Mirage in California. Interestingly, Wyman, who was a stout Catholic, a member of the Good Shepherd Parish as well as the Catholic Motion Picture Guild, was a lay tertiary of the Dominican Order of the Catholic Church and thus was buried in a nun's habit. Turning to Jane Wyman's personal life, she was married 5 times, but it's actually only her 3rd husband who draws the most attention, and that is Ronald Reagan. But let's start with husband number 1, and that is Ernest Wyman. 16-year-old Wyman married salesman Ernest Eugene Wyman in 1933 in L.A. As she had done with her radio career, she changed her age by 3 years to 19 and used the name of her foster parents, Jane Folks. Through a marriage, she became Jane Wyman. And although the marriage ended in divorce after only 2 years, she kept the name professionally for the remainder of her life. In 1937, 20-year-old Wyman married dress manufacturer Myron Martin Futterman in New Orleans. After only 3 months, they called it quits. The reason? Wyman wanted children, Futterman did not. Their divorce was granted the following year. And then came Ronald Reagan. The two met on the set of Brother Rat in 1938 and got married in 1940, when Wyman was 21 and Reagan was 27. For a time, they were the classic Hollywood couple. They had 2 daughters, Maureen in 1941, who died from melanoma in 2001, and Christine in 1947. Unfortunately, Christine was born prematurely and died 1 day after birth. They also adopted a son, Michael, in 1945. The death of their 2nd daughter probably took a toll on their relationship, and they got divorced 1 year later. Wyman would later say that their divorce was due to political differences. Ironically, Wyman was a registered Republican and Reagan, at that time, still a Democrat. When Reagan became US president in 1981, Wyman became the first ex-wife of a US president, a historical footnote she never made a comment on. In fact, she rarely ever spoke about Reagan at all, even as his political star rose. When asked during his presidency about their marriage, she famously replied, "I've always been a registered Republican, but it's bad taste to talk about former husbands and former wives, that's all. Also, I don't know a damn thing about politics." The two remained on respectful, if distant, terms. When Reagan died in 2004, Wyman issued the following statement: "America has lost a great president and a great kind and gentle man." And then eventually, in 1952, Wyman married Fred Karger, a German-American Hollywood music director and composer. They separated after 2 years and got divorced in December 1955. 6 years later, though, in 1961, they got remarried, just to be divorced again in 1965. From this marriage, Wyman had a stepdaughter called Terry. When it comes to the style and image of Jane Wyman, she wasn't showy, she wasn't scandalous, she didn't crave publicity. Her style was elegant, understated and classic, much like his screen persona. She preferred demure suits to gowns, pearls to diamonds and privacy to headlines. Her roles and her tremendous acting abilities made her the grand dame of melodrama. One of her biographers called her archetype, "brave women who triumph against all odds, from physical disability to soul-crushing heartbreak or difficult family relationships." Wyman was tremendously gifted in what she did. She did enormously good work in all types of genres and was beautiful to top it off. From vivacious career girls to wisecracking girlfriends, from despairing widows to successful musical stars, from traumatized introverts to fast-talking reporters. She always excelled. Why her home studio Warner Brothers ignored her talent so blatantly is baffling to me, as Wyman had everything it took to be a star. But of course, Wyman was extremely private and rarely ever sought the press. And maybe that is why she got seen as the anti-star, as very restrained and very private. But she also mastered the art of saying very little, but what she said very effective. When her friend Rock Hudson came out as homosexual, a friend of hers made the comment, "I wish he would triumph over it somehow." And Wyman countered, "I wish he would find happiness." After his death, Wyman only had warm words or praise for Hudson as an actor and a man. Because just like with a profession as an actress, Wyman practiced her faith without making big waves, big words, or big press campaigns. She was simply kind and did good. That is something some people forget these days, right? It's not about saying that you are a Christian or any member of any faith. It is about doing good and kind. So that leads us straight to the life lessons we can learn from Jane Wyman. First, let your work speak for itself. Jane Wyman proved that strength often comes in understatement and that you don't need to shout to be heard. Whether it was handling divorce or heartbreak or aging in Hollywood, Jane Wyman did it all with dignity. She didn't chase fame or controversy, but built a legacy on performance. In our times, it is sometimes easy to think that the one that shouts the loudest is the one that wins, that is the best, prettiest, and smartest. But you know what? The smartest thing you can do is to simply deliver. Deliver good work, honest work. Therefore, work on what is important to you and build a life and legacy that you are proud of, no matter who is printing a story about it or not. Second life lesson, reinvention is possible at any age. Just when Hollywood thought Jane Wyman was done, she returned to primetime TV and owned it. We are bombarded with messages about youth and beauty. And although it is getting better, we are reading things like 40 is the new 30 or something along those lines. 40 is 40, and that is all right. 60 is 60, and that is all right. There is no timeline attached to personal fulfillment or success. You can build a business and a fulfilled life at 30, 40, 50, 60 and beyond. You can pivot at any given time. This is your life. And if you take care of your body for the long haul, for staying active and curious until 100, you can reinvent yourself multiple times. So don't get caught in the lie that a woman's life especially ends when she's reaching 40. This is not true. When those hormones regulate, we actually become unstoppable. Third life lesson. Your childhood and your trauma don't define you. Jane Wyman probably suffered extreme trauma. She lost her family, she was left with the neighbors to be raised. That must have hurt. And she could have wallowed in self-pity. But instead, she refused to let her childhood and the negligence define her. She took responsibility for her life and for her life path and her happiness. And that is also what we should do, what you should do. We all face things that we're not happy about. But using this as an excuse to give away our power, that is not good enough. So face what is bothering you. Face your demons, your trauma, everything that is holding you back. There's so much to explore. Life is such a wonderful thing. It's worth it. And the last life lesson, doing good. As I mentioned before, especially these days, it seems important to point out that being a good person means doing good. So helping people, stepping up, providing food, providing shelter, and providing a voice for those who don't have one. You don't need to scream it from the rooftops. If you need to declare that you're a good person or a good Christian, you are not. A good person, no matter which faith you follow, is only a good human being when taking care of all other human beings and all life on earth. Otherwise, you're not a good person. Full stop. And that concludes this episode on Jane Wyman, who I find incredibly interesting, and I hope you do too. And Faltencrest is one of my favorites, hands down. So I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much. I hope you're having the most wonderful week, and I can't wait to talk to you again next time. Bye.